Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Francis Boyle. Francis is law professor at the University of Illinois downstate from me in Chicago. He also is the man who 24 years ago yesterday consummated Palestine's Declaration of Independence. Yes, that's right. Palestine is a state. It is an independent state. That's a fact. The UN membership bid is a separate issue. Should have been resolved many years ago. A sovereign state kept out of the UN. And it doesn't have anything to do with the Security Council. The Security Council only recommends. The General Assembly has full authority to admit members. Again, Palestine could have gotten that a long time ago. Anyway, there's a bigger issue at stake today. Israel is bombing and shelling Gaza. I put out an article this morning. I called it what it is, naked Israeli aggression. The same pattern plays out repeatedly when Israel wants to target a state, a group, an individual, whatever it wants to do. Well, an individual, it just targets them and kills them. Don't need any provocations for that. But the cast-led war that began on December 27, 2008, went for 23 days, I believe, into late January. There were multiple Israeli provocations during a period where Hamas declared a six-month unilateral truce. Israel broke it many times after multiple provocations, killing Palestinians in Gaza. Hamas finally responded. That was called aggression. Cast-led followed. The slaughter was horrific, and destruction, and so on. Same pattern looks to be playing out again. Now, Francis, I'll mention one thing, let you jump in. I'm looking at one late report. I'm not quite certain when this came out. I think it's within the hour, possibly. It says Israeli tanks and troops massed outside Gaza, and the military, well, they've called up thousands of reservists. We know that. I guess when they're not on active duty, it takes a little while to get them to report in and get them settled in. But I've seen different numbers. This report says 16,000. I saw another report that said 30,000. I do know Israel canceled leave for all of its military. This looks like another war, Francis.
I think you're right, Stephen. Thanks for having me on, best to your listening audience. I think you're right that obviously they're, you know, pretty small state over there, citizen soldiers. They're not going to call all those reservists up if they hadn't planned to use them. So I'm afraid we'll be looking at another Operation Cast Lead, if not worse, which, as you know, about 1,400 Palestinians were literally exterminated before our very eyes by high-tech weapon systems provided by the United States, and they really were not able to defend themselves.
So true, Francis, and there was clear evidence in 2008, 2009 that Israel used illegal weapons. White phosphorus is one. Israel, of course, denies everything, but the evidence was so clear. White phosphorus is a horrific weapon. It burns flesh to the bone, and you can't put it out. If you get white phosphorus on you and you get in water, it'll keep burning. I don't know how it does that in water, but you can't extinguish it. So literally, people are being burned, and there were reports in the last day or two, Francis, that the Palestinians are being admitted to Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, the main hospital, and their bodies have anywhere, I think, from 50% to 95% burns. I mean, that sounds like it could be white phosphorus again or something like that, and other illegal weapons as well. And there were doctors. It was a couple of years ago now. I think a Norwegian doctor who came on a mercy mission to Gaza, and I don't remember his name. He wrote a book about it. I had him on my program, and he talked about the injuries he saw firsthand and spent a time there treating patients. It's just horrific injuries that he described, and doctors in Palestine described stuff they've never seen before. well, these are illegal weapons that Israel uses. And in all Israeli wars and American wars, they test out new weapons in real time. Doesn't matter if they're legitimate or what they are, but these things are horrific. Depleted uranium is used all the time. So who knows? Maybe all of Gaza is irradiated by now.
Right. Even the United States military takes the position, the Pentagon, that the use of white phosphorus, even against soldiers, is a war crime. All it can be used for is tracer ammunition for artillery fire, light up the sky or something like that. So it's clear from Operation Cast Lead, they indiscriminately used white phosphorus on civilians, and you're right, it's as bad, if not worse, than napalm, to give you an idea of what's going on. So
it really is horrific, and this is done deliberately, and it's even worse than that, Francis, and this was so clear from Cast Lead. It's been a good while, but I honestly wrote enough easily to fill a pretty sizable book. I wrote every
Read most of your posts, Stephen, and you've done an excellent job and staying on top of the entire Palestinian issue. Maybe you should collect your essays over the years on this and put them in a book so that people would have them all readily available, because you deal not only, you know, with the war and the bloodshed and the conflicts and the genocide, the war crimes, but also the policy aspects. As you were pointing out, yesterday was Palestine Independence Day, November 15, 1988. And Palestine is now recognized de jure by 133 states. It has de facto recognition by most of the rest of the world. It has the votes for admission to the United Nations as a UN member state. And the only thing keeping it out is illegal pressure by the United States government. And then on November 29, the Palestinians had scheduled a vote for them to be given observer state status at the United Nations. They have the vote for that, too. And it appears this is intended by Israel to head this off. There's no coincidence they launched this attack on Palestine Independence Day, indicating what they think of the Palestinian state. But, you know, it could backfire on them, because when Yugoslavia was launching all-out genocide against the Bosnians in 1992, everyone was so revolted that they gave Bosnia UN membership in May. So I really don't know exactly what, you know, they're going to do. You know, I've sent my advice over there for what it's worth. I guess we'll have to see what happens.
We really will. I think there were two main reasons that Israel chose this timing. You mentioned one, the fact that on the 29th, there is a scheduled vote, unless something changes, to admit to upgrade Palestine status to non-member observer status. And as you've written, and I've quoted you, and I've written this a number of times, Palestine could get full de jure recognition. Simple to get if they just follow the procedures, and you spell them out, and I quoted what you explained. But Abbas will only go for a second-tier membership, a little less than the full Monty. Well, that will still give him rights, I guess, even with non-member observer. He can, if he chooses to, can sue Israel in the International Criminal Court. Is that correct?
That's correct. And also in the International Court of Justice in The Hague, the World Court, there are two courts in operation. The International Criminal Court, he could file a complaint there against the Israeli leaders personally for war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. And then in the International Court of Justice, they could sue Israel as a state and try to get a world court order to stop what's going on in Gaza now, right? So we'll, you know, we'll have to see what the PLO Executive Committee over in Ramallah decides. Obviously, it's not a personal issue just by him, but, you know, they do have an executive committee over there that serves as the provisional government for the state of Palestine. And I really don't know, Stephen, what to say. All the legal options certainly are open to them, but as you know, the United States, Britain, have applied massive pressure upon them to do nothing.
Yeah, that's so true, Francis, and the threats come thick and fast. You know, cut off funding, take away work permits for Palestinians allowed to work in Israel. The Congress, the House and Senate, it was a number of months back, they both had very damning, non-binding resolutions, basically threats on what the Congress would do if Palestine dare go to the UN and do anything essentially that Israel says don't do. That's basically what the resolution does. And the Senate yesterday, a unanimous resolution supporting what Israel is doing to Gaza now. Not a single profile in courage in the Senate. And I can think of a couple of people there who you would think would have a little bit of respect and wouldn't go along with mass slaughter going on and much worse intended. But 100, I don't know how many votes, I didn't check the vote, there could have been some that weren't in the Senate, but nobody voted against it. So it could have been 90-0 or 95-0, whatever it was, maybe a few abstentions. But that was just a slam dunk no vote against Israel. But of course the Senate would never do it. And I can remember quoting Edward Said, Francis, where he said, in a matter of hours, Israel could bring, or the Israeli lobby could bring the entire U.S. Senate together in support of virtually anything that Israel wants. The House, a few people in the House will go against Israel, but it's a very high-risk proposition. Cynthia McKinney knows it well. Twice she got routed out of Congress because she opposed what Israel is doing to Palestine, and she was steadfast on her principles. But there aren't many people in Congress like Cynthia McKinney. She's not in Congress now, but she was a stalwart there. If there were a lot of people like her there, Francis, it could be a different story. They're not.
Well, as your listeners know, we have the best House and Senate that money can buy, so it doesn't surprise me at all. They're pretty irrelevant to anything. Their threats are hollow to the extent that there'd need to be a new statute actually cutting off all funding for the United Nations itself, the payment of dues. And I guess the question is the United States government really prepared to bring down the entire United Nations on behalf of Israel? And at the end of the day, I think the answer would be no, because we need the United Nations to serve as cover in order to do our dirty work around the world, like Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, and things of that nature. But again, we will have to see. Yes, Foreign Minister Lieberman just threatened to topple President Abbas and the PLO in Ramallah if they go for observer state status. And then Netanyahu has an election coming up in January. Israeli leaders and, of course, American leaders, too, have a long history of using military force in order to wag the dog, rally around the flag, and win elections. Just before this, what only could be called naked aggression against Gaza, former Prime Minister Olmert, who had just been essentially acquitted on corruption charges, was publicly discussing putting together a coalition between Kadima and Labor to defeat Netanyahu, and people in Israel saying, well, he might have a chance because the coalition there would have been Netanyahu and Lieberman, who's an outright racist. But now, as of today, all Israeli parties have terminated election activities. So I think it's also clear the domestic electoral factor in here as well. So everything seemed to be favorable to Netanyahu for this attack, and then what it appears to be an invasion, he will simply ride this to victory in January. Sharon did the same thing during the Al-Aqsa Intifada, which Israel, he personally provoked September 29, 2000. So I guess that is Netanyahu's calculation. But, you know, things could backfire on him. We really don't know. Hamas certainly understood that there was going to be another Operation Cast Lead, and they have taken measures to defend themselves. Indeed, it's even now been reported in Israel that they were in negotiations for a formal ceasefire with Israel, that this Mr. Jabari was involved in and was getting ready to sign off on when Israel murdered him. And it appears they murdered him to make it clear there was not going to be a ceasefire. So there we are as of today.
Oh, absolutely. On the Jabari point, Ahmed Jamari, the head of the militant group, Qassam Brigades, the Defense Force, something like 10,000 strong, lightly armed defenders in Gaza, and he was the head of that group. He had a draft agreement, which means it's basically a final agreement once both sides sign off on it, and he had it. And I think there's no question, Francis, that Israel subverted that. And I think there's no question also that the timing on this war was not just about subverting the November 29th UN vote, but also getting the opposition political parties to back off ahead of the January 22nd election. And none of the other parties are saying anything against what's going on in Gaza. They basically support it all going on. I mean, they state support Haaretz. Made comments on this that they've basically been silenced because of this. So Netanyahu has a clear road to January 27, providing everything goes as intended. And before Cast Lead, at the end of December in 2008, Francis, Olmert was up for Ehud Olmert was up for election in January. I believe
that's
it was
correct.
In January, and right. January, or right after Cast Lead ended. Maybe it was in February.
Stephen, I think you make another good point about Hamas and Islamic Jihad. I mean, despite what you're hearing in the U.S. news media, this is, I think, somewhat analogous to the Warsaw Ghetto uprising by the Jewish underground against the surrounding Nazi army. That, I think, is probably the best historical analog to what's going on here, because Gaza is, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Gaza, and it's pretty small. You can drive back and forth across it, I guess, in about half an hour or something. Gaza is just a big city. Others have called it a big prison, but it's like the Warsaw ghetto for the Jews in World War II, and that rising up the best they can against the approaching Nazi army. So I think, you know, if your listeners were to leave with one historical analog, I think that would probably be the best one here for what's going on now.
I've made that precise comparison, Francis. Literally, the way Gaza is locked in, it's like what the Nazis did at the Warsaw Ghetto and the other ghettos, and Eastern Europe, Poland, elsewhere, I guess, where the Jews were just horrifically treated and basically starved to death slowly before they were hauled away to the extermination camps. So Israel uses a slow-motion genocide process. No ovens, no crematorium, just kind of slowly starve them to death and pummel them and beat them and bomb them occasionally and shell them and assassinate them. And this just goes on and on and on. Year after year, Gaza is the worst because it's under siege. Where the hospitals can't get the medications they need, the equipment don't have the spare parts to keep them running properly. I mean, this stuff goes on, and the world community, world leaders that could do something about this, they literally could do something about this. They do nothing, Francis. They sit on their hands. They make pious statements like, both sides should show restraint. Both sides should show restraint. I mean, you got a little kid with a slingshot, and you got a gang of bullies going after him with automatic weapons. Both sides should show restraint. I mean, I don't know how these people can make statements like this. I've quoted Catherine Ashton, the EU foreign policy head for the whole EU, other leaders making the same kinds of statements. And the ones who make honorable statements, Hugo Chavez once in a while, in Cuba, Fidel Castro isn't saying too much these days. He's mostly in retirement. But Raul Castro, I think he would make very supportive comments for Gaza. And a few other people, Rafael Correa, I believe, in Ecuador, Bolivian leader, Evo Morales, he would make supportive comments. But there are very few around the world, and even Russia and China, making the same kind of comment, basically, that both sides should show restraint. Now, who's kidding whom? I mean, you have people lightly armed against a brutal military, fourth largest in the world, with all these terror weapons and F-16s and attack helicopters. Both sides show restraint? They should know better than that. You don't want to offend Israel? The hell don't offend Israel. Tell the truth and take this thing on, head on, because there could be a slaughter that Israel is planning. Who knows what these people will plan, Francis? You know how evil they are. I would love to do a book on this if I could convince my editor to let me do it.
Right. Well, I said I think you just need to get all your essays and put them together and update them. But in any event, I've dealt, in my career with a lot of diplomats and diplomacy and governments and whatever. And, basically the response is, but what do the Americans say around the world? And the problem here, as we know, a matter of public record yesterday coming out of the White House itself, is that after his reelection as President of the United States, President Obama personally, not indirectly, personally gave Netanyahu a green light to do this. You can correct me if I'm wrong. On Operation Cast Lead, I think Bush Jr. sort of led it to Rice and his underlings to give the Israelis a green light. But here we have a statement coming right out of the White House saying, Obama saying that, of course, he understands Israel has to defend itself. So, that's a green light. Everyone knows that. And unfortunately, not to excuse their pusillanimous behavior, but the rest of the world's position is, well, if the Americans are behind the Israelis, what can we do about it? That's the problem we face. And the Palestinians understand this as well. I mean, they've been abandoned and betrayed by everyone, including the Arab leaders. Now, you'll note today, Egypt, President Morsi is making all these statements. But hey, at the time, and he's trying to hide behind the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty, which, by the way, I support and supported at the time. But at the time Egypt ratified the peace treaty, it made a reservation, which is quoted in my book, Breaking All the Rules, that in the event of an attack on a member state of the Arab League, Egypt reserves its right to come to their defense. Well, Palestine is a full-fledged member state of the Arab League. Egypt, pursuant to its reservation and security treaties it has with Arab League member states, and pursuant to the right of collective self-defense under Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, has the right, if not the duty, to come to the defense of Palestine. Well, why is President Morsi not pointing this out in public to President Obama? You know, if anyone could convince President Obama to order Netanyahu to stop right now, I think it would be President Morsi. But right now, he's hiding behind the peace treaty, despite the fact that there is this longstanding reservation. I'm not saying Egypt should go to war with Israel or anything like that, but he could certainly be taking this position in public and pointing out to Obama that this is extremely dangerous for Obama, who gave Netanyahu to the green light. Obama must now give Netanyahu the red light, and Obama can just do that with a phone call. So this is the problem that, you know, the Palestinians face today, and it's a very difficult problem, Stephen. I really don't know what to say. I give them the best advice I can and offer to do what I can for them. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's their future at stake.
It really is, Francis. And they're courageous people, and they've suffered so much for so many years. And the best they get out of most countries, including the fellow Arab countries, is rhetorical support with nothing backing it up. And they really need more than that.
And that's right, Stephen. Right now, that's all they're getting out of President Mori in Egypt. It's just like Mubarak, where Mubarak would engage in a public relations exercise to make it appear to the Egyptian people that he was doing something to help the Palestinians, when in fact he was working with the Israelis and Americans against the Palestinians. I'm not saying that Morsi is working with the Israelis and the Americans, although he is still shut down Rafah. Rafah is closed today as we speak, the crossing. But so far, all we are seeing from President Morsi is a public relations exercise to make it appear to the Egyptian people and the Arab world when he's doing something, when he so far is not doing anything. And at a minimum, he could certainly raise this Egyptian reservation to the peace treaty that, hey, we reserved our right to defend Palestine, and we have an obligation to defend Palestine, President Obama. You better tell Netanyahu right now to cease and desist and leave it at that. But I guess we'll have to see what happens, Stephen.
Yeah, he won't do it. He won't do it. And I quoted the Hezbollah leader, Nasrallah, who went on national television in Lebanon, I believe, yesterday. And he said basically this. He wanted the Arab League to unite and support Palestine. And he said, I'm not asking you to go to war, but, you know, I mean, you have power and you have influence. You have oil. You could do a lot of things. You know, start finagling with the oil price or the supplies and who gets them and who doesn't. I mean, you will get a lot of response to that. You know, you don't have to fire a shot, but the Palestinians need support. And he made very sensible comments. I just quoted a few snippets that I saw quoted on one website. I don't know what he said in the entire speech. It could have gone on for an hour or longer. But he basically made very sensible comments. But it won't happen. You'll get the rhetorical support and nothing backing it up.
Well, that's correct, Stephen, because, again, the Arab League is nothing more than a public relations exercise by Arab leaders to make it appear to their own people that they're really doing something, when most of them have been in bed with the Israelis and the Americans from the get-go. Now, as for Sheikh Nasrallah, he's different. In fact, when Israel invaded Gaza in 2006, Hezbollah came to their defense. No one else came to their defense. Hezbollah did. And then Israel attacked Lebanon and, as you know, exterminated about 12,000 Lebanese. But Hezbollah did successfully fight back and defend themselves from that invasion.
Oh, that's right.
So if Hezbollah defended the Palestinians in 2006, I don't see why Morsi can't do more.
I agree. We're out of time. I wish we had more time. I will follow this daily. I've got a new article I'll put out tomorrow. My article out today. It's on my blog site, Steve Lenman blog. Francis, many thanks for coming on short notice, too.
Well, thanks, Stephen, and have a great Thanksgiving next weekend.
Oh, thank you, Francis. You too. And we'll be on again tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern Time on Sunday, same time. Join us. Make it a regular habit.